Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
Welcome to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host today, Joe Tumalo, and I am excited to have our guest, Elizabeth. Welcome.
Thank you.
Elizabeth is Elizabeth Wagner, and she is the Senior Vice President and Chief Philanthropy Officer for Princeton Area Community Foundation in Princeton, New Jersey. Lawrenceville, New Jersey. But Princeton, then, for our national listeners, or international. And how long have you been working there, Elizabeth?
So I've been at the Community Foundation for 8 years, and before that worked in consulting, and in both roles spent a tremendous amount of time with both high net worth individuals and families, and also with foundations that were thinking seriously about long-term issues and legacy issues. And I think it's really fun to get to talk about what people's giving means to them and what legacy means to them. And I'm so excited to get to talk about that with you today.
Well, me too. Thank you. And I love, we created a title, at least a working title for the podcast, and it's Inspired Gift versus Planned Gift. And just the title alone, that says a lot. Inspired Gift versus Planned Gift. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I think one of the big challenges for gift planners is that, first of all, you have to talk to people about hard topics like death. And I was talking to an estate planning attorney friend years ago, maybe a decade ago, and she said, you know, everyone I know hates going to the dentist, but they hate coming to see me even more than they hate going to the dentist. And so I think often as gift planners, we become focused on the gift. And because planning is highly technical, that leads us to focus on what's the best gift for this person, what asset are we going to tap, what's the tax planning strategy we're going to help this person employ, and we miss the bigger picture. And to my mind, the bigger picture is that especially after tax reform, planned giving generally isn't only about taxes. Planned giving is about legacy. And so if we go and we work really hard to get the planned gift and we talk to the prospect about all these different vehicles they could use and they choose one in consultation with their accountant and their attorney, a lot of times we've created a planned gift, but there's not a lot of meaning there. I'm really engaged by the idea of inspired gifts, which is when we listen more than we talk, when we sit down with someone and we ask them not about their estate plans, but about their life and their values and what they hope their legacy will be. And instead of asking about their tax challenges, we ask about their family. We ask who inspired them. A lot of times I hear stories, particularly about mothers, but about parents and grandparents who have been an inspiration either in their care for those around them or in their self-sacrifice and hard work. And a lot of times I hear stories about grandchildren and the ways that people want to pass their values and the things they learn from their own parents and grandparents on to their grandchildren. And when we start the planned giving conversation, not with the tax issues or even with the cause that we represent, and instead we talk about what's important to you as the donor and what inspires you and what you want your legacy to be, I find that once we get around to the planned giving conversation, it's a different and more vibrant and, frankly, a conversation with more dollars. And so that, to my mind, is the inspired gift, looking to see what excites people, what their values have led them to believe, and how we can be part of their legacy.
Beautiful. And so why are we not? Why are more people not doing that? What do you think the causes are? I have a couple ideas, but why do you think people aren't having those conversations? I mean, clearly everybody is so busy and under so much pressure. Everybody in every industry is under pressure to do more in less time, less resources. And do you think that maybe sometimes it's just that pressure of, I got to get this done, and the thought of having 10 visits with this donor, unless it's a huge gift, right? So maybe the question, yeah.
I totally agree. So I think one of the biggest challenges, and this is true for everyone who has a formal gift planning role, one of the biggest challenges is our own metrics. And sometimes we have control over them, and sometimes we don't. And this is an approach that takes more time on the front end. I would argue that in my experience, it takes less time in the setup because the donor is motivated and feels that it's personally meaningful and wants to get it done, as opposed to the donor who says, I'm going to be in Wyoming for the next 3 months and I called my attorney and I'm sure she'll get back to me. And don't call me, I'll call you. So I do think there are real advantages in terms of getting to the gift documentation faster. This way, once you have an inspired donor rather than just a planned donor, but the front end is a lot more work, and you can't go back to your office after the first meeting and say, I have a sense for what this prospect might do. And I do think when we're also driven by the metrics and the fact that we need to show some progress quickly, that this approach is harder to start, although I don't think it's harder to close.
Probably closes itself, right?
Well,
if we can do a good enough job up front, engaging the donor, all the great things you're saying, the goal should be to let them, and closing sounds like a salesy thing, but let them decide and take action where we don't even have to ask for the gift. Ideally, I'm not saying don't ask for the gift, right? But right.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I think is so remarkable about letting people talk about themselves is that once you get them started, they don't stop. And they arrive at a place where they tell you almost everything you want to know. You know, if you're, let's say you're a planned giving officer for a university, they'll tell you all about where they lived on campus and what they and their friends did while they were there and which academic programs or mentors had most meaning to them outside of maybe the information you might already have about their major. They will give you all the pieces that you need to present them with opportunities if you can just get them started talking. And I think one of the challenges is we often get we are so focused on trying to get the gift that it's much easier to take a person and match them up to a couple of opportunities and take a few short proposals with you and sit down and have the meeting and present the three ideas and say, do any of these interest you? And we haven't really learned who they are, and our model of working doesn't really encourage us to learn who they are. And I think sometimes that approach does lead to a gift, right? You just get a planned gift, mm-hmm. and maybe it's a little smaller, and maybe you haven't talked about which assets would be best for you. Maybe you've just talked about which assets would be best for the donor, and sometimes there's a real advantage in looking at all the assets instead of just suggesting something. And that's a conversation. When you have the inspired conversation, you do end up working a little more closely with the professional advisors, in my experience. And a lot of times that's helpful rather than sitting down with a donor and saying, here's what I think you could do, and you go and talk to your attorney about whether there's an asset that makes sense, and I'll suggest these too. I think you get a better interaction with the donor and their planning professionals if you let the donor lead with who they are and what they want their legacy to be. But again, it is a more involved process.
And working in a community foundation environment, my initial thought while you're talking is, not that any of it's not easy for anybody, and I'm not saying it's easy. Being a community foundation, are you attracting generally more philanthropic people who are going to be open to this conversation more so than if I'm a planned giving person at a university or hospital where, you know, it's a lot of the fundraising has been transactional, and am I going to have a harder time having this type of conversation with somebody? So that was a long question, but to summarize it, in a community foundation, are you attracting a more philanthropic donor to begin with that's going to give you a better chance of having these deeper conversations?
So that's a really interesting question. I think the advantage that the community foundation model gives me in having these conversations is a different but related advantage. And I think it's that the potential donor doesn't perceive me to have an agenda. I don't represent, in their view, a particular institution. Usually for them, I represent a solution. So we are dealing with generally charitable people, but I would argue that their focus is pretty transactional. Mostly donors come to community foundations across the country looking for a donor-advised fund. And they tend to be at least somewhat tax-driven. One of the nice advantages there is that often that donor has a professional advisor with whom they're working closely, an attorney or an accountant or both, on planning, and so tends to be a little more aware of sort of where their assets are on the chessboard, as it were, and how their gifts out of income versus out of assets might unspool over the course of their lives. So I think sometimes I get a little bit of a better educated donor in terms of their own financial picture and their own charitable intention. But it's interesting. I get people a lot of times who have no notion that they want anything beyond, especially now, a way to bunch their gifts over the course of several years to create a tax advantage that they otherwise wouldn't have. And so in that environment, I find that they're very surprised when we have a longer-term conversation. When I say, did you know that if what you really care about is education for kids who started out like you, who started out with nothing and who have huge potential and who want to go on like you to be a C-suite executive, we can help you do that forever. And you can make your fund here the repository of a whole bunch of assets in your estate. Whatever's left in them can go into your fund, and we can be your surrogate forever, and you can go on for the rest of time helping kids get the educations they need to get out of poverty and into a life like the one you've made for yourself. People are shocked. They mostly haven't thought about legacy in that way. So I think in a lot of ways that's pretty similar to the experience that someone who's, you know, let's say a planned giving officer at a hospital, for example. I think the advantage that I have over that person is, you know, when the gift planner from the hospital calls you, you pretty much know what the conversation's going to be about.
Yes.
And I think I'd rather have the element of surprise.
Shock and awe.
Exactly. But I do think the same principles apply. You know, when in my experience, when I've sat down with people and said, tell me about you, instead of, let me tell you about my institution, I get a lot more information. And so I focus on asking open-ended questions. A lot of times I start by saying, where's home for you? And sometimes people tell me where they live. And sometimes people tell me about their favorite place in the world where they don't live right now but wish they lived. And sometimes people tell me about their family, about a spouse or about children. And it's a very interesting way to open a conversation. Where's home for you? And then a lot of times after they get through that question, I say, so what is it that makes you give? Why do you bother? And almost always, if I can get them talking in that question somewhere, I will hear the beginning of whatever will be the legacy plan. And I have to tell you, 90% of the time, that answer is about mom, which is terrifying. I have little kids, and so it's very frightening to me.
How do you mean when you say about mom, about their mothers?
It's often about having learned to care for other people at the knee of a mother, or sometimes a grandmother, or less frequently a father or grandparent, grandfather or other family member. But almost always people say, I give because I remember when I was five, and that's the year I was in kindergarten, and I spent half the day with my Aunt Bertha. And whenever someone in the neighborhood was sick, Aunt Bertha would make me help her make some food, and we'd walk it over there. And that's how I learned to care for people. And sometimes, this is a true story, sometimes the conversation continues in this way, as it did with the person who told me about Aunt Bertha. Sometimes it goes on to say, now Aunt Bertha didn't have very much, and Aunt Bertha was really generous with what she did have, and I decided that someday when I had more, I'd do more. It's amazing how often I have that exact conversation.
So
so a nice little takeaway there might be look for the female influencer in the donor's history, if there is one.
Yeah,
right?
I think asking who influenced you, who has shaped the way you think about giving can tell you a lot. I also have to tell you, as we talk about legacy, whenever I hear, especially if it's mom, whenever I hear that there's someone who is a big part of shaping a donor's charitable worldview, if we're going to end up talking about a project with a naming opportunity, somewhere along the way I'll remind them, you know, you could name this for mom.
Hmm.
And lately I have seen a lot of people, you know, who maybe don't necessarily want the recognition for themselves, who maybe have achieved a lot of recognition in their professional life already. A lot of people are very, very interested in that idea of being able to create a permanent legacy that remembers the person who inspired them. And so here we are back at that theme of inspiration. I think trying to tie a current gift to whatever inspired someone's lifetime of giving really leads you to a much more exciting planned giving opportunity.
Now, the other thing that I keep thinking of is the fact that not every donor wants to have these conversations, right? We all have transactional donors or donors that keep us at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, I know you well enough now to know that you have that, I call it a sensitivity for planned giving. It's like developing another sixth sense of really just being really acutely aware, obviously, of having a high EQ, emotional quotient, right, to get a sense of, is this donor willing to let me take them down this road of conversation, or are they going to keep me at arm's length? And I guess we find that out pretty quickly.
I agree. So I think I always find that out in those first two questions. Where's home for you and why do you give? Mm-hmm. And if I don't get anywhere in those questions, usually I change the rest of the conversation. And so if I get someone, when I say where's home for you and they tell me their address, and then I say why do you give, and they don't say much at all, or else they talk about tax reasons, or they say my wife makes me, or they say, well, I'm on these boards and you have to be on the board. If I get any of those answers, that's when usually we start a different conversation. And so one of the things that I often do bring along with me is we have a little iPad that is stocked with some of our donor stories. And so if I see someone who really isn't interested in having the conversation, I will make one last-ditch effort. I will pull up one of our pretty little videos with a donor talking about what they were able to achieve. And I'll say, you might know this person, and I wonder if you have 2 minutes just to take a peek and see what this person did with their fund. And then we can keep talking about what you might like to do. And if the person really doesn't care for the video option either, then we have a nice short conversation. And I go back and I write a note in my database that says, try again in 10 years if they're still alive. And we just move on. There are people, I mean, you have to know when to cut and run, right?
Right, yeah.
And I do think there are a lot of people who don't want to have this conversation. I find there are fewer than you would think who don't want to have this conversation. But when they really don't want to have it, you know fast. And one of the things I have learned over time is I can't change people. I can't change my kids, and I can't change my colleagues, and I definitely can't change my donors. And so for me, I have joked about this in the past, but I've never done it. I always say we're going to create in our database an affiliation code for profiles of people who really just don't care. And I'll just be able to pull a list someday of all the people who don't care, and we'll know not to go back to them. But in all seriousness, we do tend to document, and I tend to document why I think someone's not engaged. And a lot of times when I talk to someone who's not engaged, one of several things seems to be coming up. One, it's not the right time of life. So try having a conversation about planned giving to someone whose first child is in college and whose twins are going to start next year. That's just dead in the water, right? So when I discover there's some circumstance that is creating a lot of anxiety for the prospect, I just put a little tickle in the file to come back after those twins have graduated from college. I find that after all the kids are financially emancipated, let's say after the kids are off the parental dole, sometimes these conversations change. And so I'll make a little note in our database and have a tickler come up to circle back to that person with a more meaningful conversation at that time, even if it's years in the future. And we'll do just a little bit of stewardship between now and then, invite them to some events and keep them close and occasionally make sure they get a personal note or a personal email. If it doesn't seem like it's a situation in the person's life, the other thing we're seeing a whole lot of is people who just feel like they'd like to be charitable, but even though they have $17 million in assets, they're sure they're going to run out of money. And I don't know about the donors you talk to, Joe, but I have talked to some people who have a really astonishing bank balance and even more in assets other places who are convinced they're going to die in poverty. Mm-hmm. Have you talked to anyone
about that? No matter how much
you
have, I still do some direct donor work for a world relief organization. So I'm on the phones. I make about 50 calls a week. Mine are cold calls to very loyal donors, but they're not expecting the call. And I'm kind of the opposite. I'm surprised at how, when I look at their gift history and the average gift amount, lifetime giving, and then when I talk to them or do a little bit of wealth screening, there's not a lot there, but they're just so I guess the opposite end of the spectrum. And it's a faith-based, it's a Catholic-based organization, mm-hmm. so there's that real, you know, we know that one of the number one sectors for giving is faith-based. So there's that real strong connection there that these people that don't seem like they have a lot of wherewithal are making these pretty significant gifts. So, but yes, I guess no matter how much money we make, we never feel like we have enough. The uncertainty in healthcare, the uncertainty in so many, just in life in general, I guess people are always concerned about not having enough.
That part I find just fascinating. I can't talk people out of their feelings. And so when we figure out that this is someone who really feels like no matter how much they have, they'll never have enough, frankly, that usually is the end of our meaningful engagement around the planned gift with that person. It just would take too much time and effort to figure out where to go. And with other prospects like the ones you're describing, right, people who've been loyal for a really long time, those are so much more fruitful than spending the next 10 years convincing this person that between their long-term care insurance and their $17 million, they'll be okay. And unfortunately, we don't have a therapist on staff. So, you know, you just run out of time to have these conversations. I love the model you just talked about, though. So what I'm really talking about is people who are much less qualified than the donors that you're calling. And the donors that you're calling are my favorites, right? Those are the fantastic. It's so easy to have the inspired gift conversation with them because you can call and say, and I like doing this with anyone who's given in five out of the last 7 years, or else anyone who's ever given to us for 10 years, any 10 mm-hmm. years. So if you fall in either of those categories, five out of the last 7 years, or any 10-year period, I figure you're a great planned giving donor. And with those people, it's so fun because you can have a really deep version of this conversation right away. You can say, you've been so engaged here, and I would love to know what drives that. Is it your experience that they will sort of pour out their hearts to you about why they give?
Well, when I did the workshop for you folks at your place, I talked about this ABQ, always be qualifying,
mm-hmm.
and qualifying, constantly qualifying donors. And that's not a stagnant thing. It's not I qualify you once and we're done, right? Just like you said, I qualify you now, but you've got 10 grandkids and 4 kids in college. So right now you're in that category of I'm going to keep giving, but I don't want to talk about more. So it's still, even though these people are really, really loyal and faithful, it's still finding the ones, it's still qualifying everybody. So, and I like to say it's a numbers game until it becomes a relationship game.
Right.
When it comes to the call, you know, calling donors that aren't expecting our call, even though they're loyal. They're not expecting a call, right? So, and the first thing they think is that I'm calling to ask them for an outright gift money.
Right.
Right. So I'm constantly qualifying people. And I know after doing it for 3 years for the same organization that for every 10 people I call, I'll connect with two. For every 10 people I connect with, I'll have a meaningful conversation with another two. Right. I use that 20% rule. And then for every 10 people I have that meaningful conversation, two or three will say either I've already done something, never told you, or they're open to doing more. So there is the point is it's a numbers game, and it's just constantly qualifying people. Do they want to have these deeper conversations? For some donors, it's just like paying the cable bill. I send you guys a check every month, or you take it out of my account, and that's fine, right? But absolutely, when you get the ones, and I know when somebody has had a personal connection with the organization somehow, relative or in their upbringing, they were exposed to the mission somehow directly, that, you know, those people go right to the top because there's an emotional connection, right? We're always trying to get people emotionally connected or find out or help them find out maybe what they're not thinking about, right? Part of our job, you mentioned therapist. Part of our job is a therapist. I have a friend who's a therapist, and she says she does mostly listening, and her job is to help the client figure out the answer for themselves and to think about things in a way that they never thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I see our role in fundraising as that as well. Be a great listener, ask great questions, but really help the donor. Like you said, I can't convince anybody of anything, but if I can maybe get them thinking about something related to the organization that they never really thought about, or related to their family and the impact and the legacy and all that good stuff, I think that's part of our job, don't you, is to help them figure it out for themselves. But guide them.
Oh, you know what I was going to say? I think we're about to run out of time, but I wanted to recommend one resource with families, and that's the Picture Your Legacy cards from 2164, which is out of New York. They are, you can Google Picture Your Legacy. You can download it for free in the App Store for iPhone and iPad, and it just is a way to have that conversation with people visually about what is your legacy and what do you care about. And we use that often with people who say family is important to them. They learn things from their grandparents that they want to pass down to their grandkids, and they're not sure how to do it. So I like that visual medium of helping people figure out what their legacy is.
And that's 2164.net?
2164.net. You are good.
Yeah. Well, I'm just brought up on the computer. I'm not that good. And then you mentioned your donor stories that you use. Are they online where our listeners might be able to see what you do there? The donor videos?
Take a look at PACF, that's as in Princeton Area Community Foundation.org.
Terrific. And what can we kind of summarize the big takeaways for our listeners today's conversation?
Absolutely. When you're talking to a donor about a planned gift, don't be too quick to get to the mechanics of the gift. Instead, ask them who they are. Ask them where they came from, both in terms of geography and family, and ask them where they're going, especially in terms of family and the messages that they want to live on after them. And somewhere in that conversation, you will hear the opportunity for an inspired gift that will be deeply meaningful to the person and hopefully to your institution too.
Beautiful. And if people want to get in touch with you, if our listeners maybe are donors themselves, you mentioned the Donor Advised Fund, how would they get in touch with you, folks?
I would be absolutely delighted to hear from anyone who wants to talk about this topic more. On our website, pacf.org, you'll find all of my contact information. You're welcome to email or to call.
Wonderful. My guest today has been Elizabeth Wagner with the Princeton Area Community Foundation. Elizabeth, this is incredibly helpful. It's a great thing to really just be the eternal student and keep working on this stuff, keep developing this side of our business, these skill sets that are just so important. Thank you so much for being here.
I've had a ball. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.